From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio.
I didn't put myself in front of you to have you feel bad for me. I put myself in front of you to let you know that you don't need to feel bad for me.
That's Sam Burns. He's at the center of a new documentary film that profiles a rare genetic disorder called progeria. It causes children to age at an accelerated pace. Sam is in his teens, but in effect, he has the body of an 80-year-old. The film is about the effort of Sam's parents to find a treatment for progeria, but it's also just a way to get to know this extraordinary kid.
This is my life, and this progeria is part of it. It's not a major part of it, but it is part of it.
Today in the program, we'll profile the film as part of our documentary series. It's called Life According to Sam. Join us after this news.
Hi, this is Elaine Clark, one of the producers of Radio West. Our free podcasts are made possible by KUER's generous listeners. If you're a fan, we invite you to put $10 in our tip jar. Text KUER to 85944 to make that donation. Thank you.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Sam Burns is a 17-year-old kid. He lives in the Boston area. He's in the school marching band, loves all kinds of sports and watching television. He's a big fan of the Dave Matthews Band. So that's the ordinary part. Sam also happens to have a very rare genetic disorder that has accelerated the aging process for his body. Kids with this condition aren't expected to make it past their early teens. Sam has lost his hair. He has translucent skin and fragile bones and heart problems. It's called progeria, the disorder. And in the new documentary film, we come to know Sam and his parents, Leslie Gordon and Dr. Scott Burns, as they work their way through the Byzantine process of bringing a drug to the market that may make a difference for children with progeria. The film is also about the ordinary part of Sam's life and the people around him who feel an obvious sense of urgency, but who are also just trying to live for the moment. The film is called Life According to Sam. It's the latest in our documentary series, Through the Lens. It's our partnership with the Utah Film Center. We're screening the film next week when the Film Center will be awarding Sam the Peak Award for Disability in Film, and we'll be giving you details about that as we go along. We'll be hearing from the filmmakers here in a few moments. Joining us now is Dr. Leslie Gordon. She co-founded the Progeria Research Foundation when her son Sam was diagnosed with the disorder. She oversees the foundation's research programs. She's co-chair of the Progeria Clinical Trials. And Dr. Gordon is joining us by phone from her home in Foxborough, Massachusetts. And Dr. Gordon, welcome to you. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to begin with talking about about what is happening to Sam. Give us a sense of this condition. Give us physiologically what's going on with Sam's body.
Sure. Well, Sam and all children with progeria suffer from a disease of it's called segmental premature aging, where there is some clinical overlap with aging, the things we like to look at and ask important questions, for example, about the cardiovascular disease, and some things do not. At the cellular level, we look for an abnormal protein that we discovered after we discovered the gene mutation for progeria, and it's called progerin. And we have found that progerin, our enemy protein in progeria, is present at very high levels in Sam and the other children, and it's also present at much lower levels but builds up in the rest of us as we age. And this is the culprit. This is what causes all of the signs and symptoms that you just described. Most importantly, and it is the cardiovascular disease, right, the premature form of atherosclerosis that leads to heart attacks and strokes. And that's what's most important to combat in progeria and to compare between the children with progeria and the rest of us as we age.
So for Sam, this may seem like a strange question, but these kids continue to progress in many ways that a child without the condition has, I suppose. I mean, it's more than just a accelerated growth.
Right.
How else is it affecting their bodies?
Sure, in many, many ways. So progeria is affects a lot of different systems. Sam and the other kids they're born looking fairly normal, but within the first year or two, they start looking very, very different. They, what's called, fail to thrive. They stop growing normally. They end up being extremely small, only about 20 to 35 pounds, even when they're teenagers, sometimes 40, but, you know, that's sort of the max. They lose their hair. They have no appreciable subcutaneous fat, and that, of course, leads to problems. They've got bone issues. Low bone density, or in what we would call osteoporosis, weakened bones, and they become fragile, and their cardiovascular systems are dramatically affected. So a lot of these things affect the rest of us as we become, 70, 80 years old. But there are some things that luckily they don't have to deal with, and one of those is a neurological deficit. Their intellectually and their personalities are age appropriate. So Sam, at the age of 17 now, is a 17-year-old of mind, but some things about his body are not 17.
I want to ask you, Sam was born October 23rd, 1996, and you talk about this in the film, that you could tell almost right away. You said something from your soul told you something was wrong.
Well, it's the old story that the mom, the parents, they see things because they're connected to their own child in a very special way, that perhaps a pediatrician who only sees the child intermittently wouldn't see. And so because you're a parent, you see more, you feel more, and we knew that something was going on, but we just didn't know what that was.
I want to play a moment from the film, This Is You. At a kind of crucial moment, seeing an X-ray, which it seemed like in some ways kind of the moment when you realized that as you say, things were different. Here's a clip from the film Life According to Sam.
So here we are, in the back room with the radiologist, and he put up an X-ray of Sam's chest, and it showed the clavicles being short. But I was just a resident. I was just starting out, so I asked the radiologist to put up a comparison shot of a normal chest X-ray, and all of a sudden it was just so dramatically different because I could see that things were very different in his clavicles. And this is exactly what was in the paper. And I said to the radiologist, could this be anything else? And he said, I don't think so. I don't think it could be anything else.
And then the film gets at this idea of what you do now and how you reacted and your husband talks about in the film that as physicians, you're both physicians, of course, the idea, as he puts it, is to fix things. And now you're faced with this thing that people say maybe can't really be fixed. As a doctor, beyond the mother part, how did you start to work through this issue?
I don't know that I can separate being, at that moment, a compassionate, loving mom and a physician, because it's sort of all part of the same need to help, to care for, and to fix. We were both trained to fix things, to care for children. And it was inconceivable to us that we couldn't even care for our own child with this disease, that there was absolutely nothing going on, no research, almost no experts, just nothing, no place for families or physicians to go to find help, no core. And we decided to create that core and fill that huge void and start something moving.
You describe it in the film as you say that your senses became really acute through those early years. And you put it this way. You say you kind of just surrendered to it, which means what? That you were just going to devote yourself? Obviously, I guess. But you just sort of gave in to this idea. And what does that mean, that the sense of urgency came?
Oh, absolutely. An absolute sense of urgency, which has never left.
Right.
First of all, it took a long time to diagnose Sam. hopefully much longer then than it does for most people now, and that is because there wasn't a lot of information or photographs of children at younger ages with progeria. It just wasn't out there. I had never learned about it in medical school. Scott had barely learned about it, and most physicians had never seen it, even in a book. So when we started the Progeria Research Foundation, that was one of our goals, to create a core, to get out there and let people know what children with progeria look like at all ages, so that this could be recognized, so more children could be diagnosed younger, mm-hmm. not go through a barrage of testing like Sam and many other kids did. And then, of course, to start any and all programs that were necessary to find the cause, because we didn't even know the cause right. of progeria, treatments and cure.
In 1992, this seems like a crucial moment, of course. You realize that Sam is diagnosed in 1998, I guess it was.
Right.
And then you find out the mutation that, as you mentioned, it's discovered the genetic mutation yes. here, which sort of kicks things into high gear in some ways, too. And the premise for the film, is, of course, is you working through this process of creating this trial for this drug. Mm-hmm. And I wanted you to say something about that. Basically, as I understand it, it's a cancer drug, but that it may have some effect here.
Right. Right, you just sort of condensed 5 years into 30 seconds, and that was terrific. Sam was diagnosed when he was two.
Yeah.
We created the Progeria Research Foundation within the year, and then we started working. I mean, that's what you have to do, is just go to work and find the right people. That's one of the things, find the right people to work on the disease, get them the tools they need, the cells, the tissues, the blood, whatever they need, to ask the right questions. And so we put together a team, a consortium of scientists, to search for the gene for progeria. Now, we didn't know what that would lead to. We didn't know that the gene finding would open up so many doors. But fortunately, when we did discover that, actually it was in 2002 that we first discovered it. We published it in 2003 right. in collaboration with this consortium. The lead author on that is Francis Collins, an amazing man who's the National Institutes of Health director mm-hmm. now. And all of a sudden, we had something to grab onto. My gosh, we discovered the gene mutation for progeria in a gene and a protein called lamin A. And lamin A was not associated with progeria before, but all of a sudden we thought, oh my gosh, this causes the disease. We all have it. What does that mean at the biological level? And can we answer some questions that might lead us to treatment for progeria? Mm. It was almost immediately apparent, by understanding the normal function of this gene, what might be going wrong in progeria that turned lamin A into progerin, mm. that protein that causes the disease, that generated the progerin instead of the normal protein. We also knew a lot about the biology of that normal protein and could say, well, what's gone wrong here, and is there a drug already out there that might work on that problem? And in fact, there was. The reason that there was a drug out there that could be essentially repurposed for progeria is because proteins often undergo similar processing for similar purposes. So progerin, like many proteins, likes to, in order to function, attach to membranes. Mm. And it grabs onto, it inserts itself within the nuclear membrane in order to do its job, or actually affect its disease, yeah. just like many other proteins do. And one of those other proteins is called RAS, and RAS is affected in some cancers. So there were drug companies already working for many, many years, more than 10 years, and put in millions and millions of dollars to using this strategy, trying to combat this strategy that we thought was used for cancer. And therefore, we just had to take a look at it and try to transfer it over to use for progeria. We started by doing that in the laboratory in cells that you grow in a dish and asking if you put these drugs on top of the progeria cells, would they normalize? We moved into asking the same questions about whether these types of drugs would help mice that were newly created with the genetic mutation for progeria, and they did, and therefore we were able to move into clinical trials after that.
Yeah, and trials, that's the kind of an essential part about the film, which we'll get to, the particulars about this, because I want to talk to you as we go along here about the kind of the trajectory of getting something like this going, because the film is very much mm-hmm. about that, but it's very much also about the personal part of this story as well. When we get back from a break, we'll talk about that. We'll have the filmmakers join us as well. Dr. Leslie Gordon is with us, Sam's mom, co-founder of the Progeria Research Foundation, co-chair of the Progeria Clinical Trials. For a link, by the way, to the Progeria Research Foundation, you can go to our website. Next Wednesday, it's November 6th, we're partnering with Utah Film Center to present a free screening of Life According to Sam. It's part of our Through the Lens documentary series. Sam's dad, Dr. Scott Burns, will be with us for in person for a Q&A following the film. We'll also be joined by the filmmakers. I'm not sure if they're going to be there with us in person or in Skype, but you can get to the details about all of that. And I also should mention, before the film begins, Sam is going to be receiving the Peak Award for Disability in Film from the Utah Film Center. The award celebrates the legacy of Kim Peek, who was fictionalized in the film Rain Man. So a lot of details there. You can get them on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. So we're going to take a break. We'll be back. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're presenting another documentary in our Through the Lens documentary series. We're talking about a lovely and heart-wrenching film today called Life According to Sam. It's about Sam Burns. He's a teenager right now, but he has a very rare genetic syndrome called progeria. Basically, Sam is aging like the rest of us, only at an incredibly accelerated pace. It's more complicated than that, of course. The film is about Sam and about his parents, both doctors, who are unwilling to accept the realities of progeria and urgently trying to find a treatment. We're screening the film next week. Today in the program, we're talking about it. You can join us if you like, 801-585-WEST, our email address, radiowest@kuer.org. We have with us Dr. Leslie Gordon, Sam's mom, co-founder of the Progeria Research Foundation. She's joining us by phone from her home in Foxborough, Massachusetts. And we're also joined by the filmmakers, Sean Fine and Andrea Nix Fine, who've been making films together since they were married back in 2003. Their film Innocente won an Oscar award for short documentaries. Their feature documentary War Dance earned them two Emmys. Sean Fine and Andrea Nix Fine directed Life According to Sam, which premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival and is airing now on HBO this month. They're joining us today from NPR member station WAMU in Washington, D.C. Sean Fine, Andrea Nix Fine, welcome. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thanks.
Really, it's our pleasure.
Let me start, Sean and Andrea. I wanted to ask you, how did you find Sam?
It started with a producer on the film named Miriam Weintraub. Kind of put us all together and told us about the Gordons and Sam. And we read everything on paper. And we, you know, on paper, you don't know if you really want to tell a film or if you want to tell the story. And so we basically said we had to meet these guys, and they also had to meet us, because at that time, Leslie and Scott had not let anyone really interview Sam or film him in depth at all or film their story. So we would be really the first people telling their story. And so we all kind of met at a roadside Chili's off of 95 in Foxborough, Massachusetts, and they were in one side of the booth and we were in the other. And I think right away when we started talking to them and we realized what a team they were and how they view life and who they were as people, we were immediately drawn to them as filmmakers and as people. And then we were really amazed by Sam. I mean, right away, it only took, I think, 30 seconds to a minute for me to actually stop thinking, Sam has progeria, and just start seeing Sam, and Sam is Sam. And then he said to us at the end of that conversation, You know, I think whether this is made or not, I think we're all going to be friends. And then he went on to say, if you guys do make this, I have one request, and that's that I don't want anyone to feel sorry for me during this film at all, because I've seen those films, he said, and I don't want that to be this film. And so that kind of set us out on our journey. We had our marching orders, I guess.
Well, when you began, Andrea wanted to get you on this. Did you think it was going to be about, you know, it's about the process of bringing this drug to market, you know, the sort of, you know, the really complicated medical process. But then there's also the profile of Sam part. Did you know it was going to be as much about Sam at the time, or did you think it was going to be about this other part? Or did you have that figured out in the beginning?
I think the answer for us was that we wanted to do both. I mean, their lives are really rich, and there's many layers and ways and perspectives to look at this story. I think as filmmakers, it's always helpful to have a timeline that you kind of becomes like the skeletal link that you kind of are able to move forward on. And from that, you can sort of weave and jump in and out of people's lives and then come back to, well, where are we at with the drug trial? What's the, you know, how's that going? And that's something that's really effective to kind of help structure a story. But I think we weren't sure, you know, you really don't know how, where people are going to take you in their day-to-day lives of what's happening, and also their emotional landscape of where they want to go. And I think, although at the time it felt a little difficult, we thought we'd be filming for a year. We ended up filming for 3 years, because we had always envisioned and hoped to end the story when Leslie's trial was published. And that took longer than she had thought and what we had thought. But the beauty of all that is that emotional landscape I was referring to before is different, especially for Sam, because we start when he's 13, and when you're 16, you're just not that same kid. You just have a different perspective. And I think that really gave the film a different kind of feel. And it's funny, because you had said, you know, in your prep of this, that this is a lovely and a heart-wrenching film, and I challenge that a little bit, because I actually think the idea of even wrenching, that's something that feels like it's something you cringe at or close down at or shut down. And I actually think this is like a heart-expanding film. You know, you feel full when you watch this, and you feel full of life, and you feel full of Sam's life. And that's why Life According to Sam, I think, just becomes a story for all of us to look at, is like what we want out of our lives, what we want out of our lives with our families, with our children, and what we're going to do while we're all here. So I think that's also another layer that was really important in the film, of like kind of thinking on that level and where that takes you as a story arc.
You know, what Sean said is interesting, where it doesn't take long before you kind of forget the progeria part of Sam. And this comes through, it seems like it's almost a theme in the film, because he just seems like such an ordinary teenage kid. And that really comes through. That seems like an important thing for you too.
No, yeah, he is an ordinary teenage kid. He's Sam. He's not, you know, he's not a disease, somebody that has a disease named progeria that is named Sam. He's Sam, and this is just, like he said, it's part of his life. And I think oftentimes as people, we distance ourselves from the unknown. We like to put the unknown in a box and categorize it and, you know, not really look at what's beyond it. And I think for us, this was an opportunity to sit down with someone who's remarkable and share their life and you know, you give people, I think, 5 minutes, and they want to open the box of the unknown with Sam, and they just want to know, they want more and more, and you can't get enough, and you want to hear more what he has to say, and you want, I mean, if anything, when we were editing the film, we just kept putting more of Sam in, because we just wanted to watch him and what he does, because he's a remarkable young man, despite what he's got going on, and that was really important to us.
Dr. Leslie Gordon, let me ask you, what were the ways you were thinking about whether or not you wanted to do this? I mean, what were the things that concerned you? As Sean mentioned, no one had really filmed Sam before. You hadn't led anyone before. What made you figure now might be the time?
Yeah, it's a great question. We definitely, most of Sam's youth, thought, you know, this kid is here to live his own life. He's not here to be, he's here just to have his pals around. Even at the age of, I don't know, 5, I remember telling him, you know, if somebody says to you, oh, you're bald, because that's what kids do. They just sort of blurt out what they're thinking. He used to turn to them and say, yeah, tell me something I don't know. How about let's go play? Yeah. And that would be the end of it. And then he just had his community. He had his friends. He had his sense of self. He's a very secure kid. And at the age of, you know, I guess it was 13, when we started all of this, the question was to Sam, we thought maybe he was old enough to decide for himself what he wanted to do. And I think he not only did certainly not want people to feel bad for him, but he had a choice about whether he wanted to play a role in trying to help other children with progeria. He's pretty generous and kind, and he wants to help. And we all thought that this might be a way for us to reach more children with progeria, to let them know and their physicians know and the world know that there's a place to go to help children with progeria. And that's, you know, in the trials and at the Progeria Research Foundation. And for something so rare, outreach is difficult and information is difficult. And he made the choice to put himself out there with a lot of trust in Andrea and Sean, which was well placed to do that. Yeah. And we all followed along.
I want to, Sean and Andrea, I want to ask you about, let's talk about Leslie Gordon behind her back for just a moment. Because, I mean, the film is, in many ways, this is much about her as it is Sam. At least I got that sense. And because her role as doctor, as crusader, you know, as mother principally, talk about the role that you saw her playing, because she really drives the narrative in important ways.
I think, you know, that how you summarized the different roles that she plays was on, you know, and I think the only one that she likes us talking about and will easily smile about is the mom part, because the other part, she's very quick to say, you know, I am one of a team of people on this research, or this is my whole family doing this, and she's very humble that way. But there is a fierceness and a clarity and a drive and a passion that she has that makes her really light the screen up. You see it in the way she talks and how she shares information and how clear she is on why she's doing what she's doing and the role she sees, how she's playing in the big picture. And she's captivating that way. And I think that we always saw her as someone that we wanted to follow because, you know, she's in every element of the story. She's Sam's mom, and you see the domestic side of things. And in fact, when we start the film, you don't know she's a doctor. You're just seeing her being a mother and helping Sam get ready for school that day. And she says, you know, mothers can do anything. And I love that when she says that. I get chills every single time I say that. And I think all the mothers out there who watch her are like, yeah, you know, and I'm a mom too. You know, Sean and I have two young kids. And then you start to realize not only that, she's saving these kids. And she's in the process of trying to save her son and trying to save these kids. And the way in which she goes about that is with such love and such intelligence that she's a hero in this film. And I think it was very, exciting to film her and meaningful.
I want to play a moment, another moment from the film. This is Leslie. And Sean, I'll have you react to this because she's talking about sort of that connection between being a mom and that role of being, a scientist, a doctor. And she talks about how the bar of excellence has to come up. Here's another moment from the film Life According to Sam.
As a mom who thinks about not only Sam, but all of the other kids all of the time, it brings the bar of excellence very, very high. There's no cloudiness. There's no thought about academic success because it all revolves around what's safest, but also hopefully best for helping the children. It's pure.
Yeah, she says it's pure. It's interesting. And there's this moment, Sean, I wanted to ask you about. There's a lovely young woman, Priya, who's affected, and she's in the film. And Priya says she's from India. She has this condition, and she talks about how it's the personal stuff from Dr. Gordon that helps her most, not the medical, part, which I thought was a really interesting insight because there are those two sides. But for Priya, anyway, it was the personal thing that seemed to really get to her.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the first thing when you see Leslie with not just kids with progeria, with any kids. She gets down on their – I've noticed it with our kids when she met them. She kneels down to their level, looks at them, and talks to them like people and smiles and touches them. And I think especially for Priya, someone who had progeria, who in India – I remember Priya's dad telling me her doctor barely – the first doctor they went to in India barely wanted to touch her because he thought he would catch what she had. And I remember him telling me when she was on the bus, people – would stare at her and not want to sit near her, and they would almost, she wasn't an untouchable, but they would say that she was an untouchable in India. And then when they came, he was explaining, when they came to the hospital, the first thing Leslie did was give Priya this huge hug and talk to her like a person. She wasn't a patient, she was a person. And I think Leslie does that with all the kids, and she just has a she has an excitement for life. I don't think I've rarely met someone that never she's I don't think I've ever heard Leslie be negative about anything. Even when Sam was going through a little bit of teenage angst and giving her a hard time, he left out the door one day and I said, "Wow, is this hard because he's being a little difficult?" And she said, "It's great. He's being a teenager. This is what teenagers do. I love this." You know, and it's so neat to see somebody, and I think I've kind of learned that a little bit from her, to embrace all these things that sometimes we complain about, but they're just part of life. And life is so complex and so interesting, and I think she does that with everything.
Yeah. Let me play a clip, something that Sam says early on in the film I wanted you to talk about. This is sort of Sam reacting to his kind of his mom's role. Again, from the film Life According to Sam.
I kind of just want my mom to be done with progeria for her sake, because she doesn't have a normal job. I mean, she has a job, but it's not the normal kind of job where you go in, you do what you're supposed to do, you get paid, and you can leave whenever you want at your own risk. My mom will keep working forever until progeria is cured and she doesn't have to.
Andrea Nixfine, what's Sam's take on all of this? I mean, he just sees how his mom is completely devoted to this. But I mean, he's feeling for her. He wants her to be done with it, but you know, she never will, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's one of the things I thought about a great deal, because when you first meet this family, you have all these questions in your mind of how they handle this on a day-to-day basis, what they talk about, what they don't talk about, how their relationships are affected, and I think with the question I was thinking of. You know, because this film just makes you self-reflect the entire time you make it, watch it, see it afterwards, you know. What would you do? How would you put your time in? How would you decide if you felt like you were the best bet to save the life of your kid? How do you then divide up how much time you spend doing that in the science world? And then how much time do you spend being with the kid? You know, how do you – it's that role that everybody has to think about how much time they spend, you know, with their kids versus work. But this has become, you know, with a much more extreme feeling to it about time. And I think that Sam loves his parents very much. His parents are his friends. And I see that all the time, and it's quite remarkable, especially in teenagers. They are very close, and they have an enormous amount of respect for each other. And I think that respect also, Sam has enormous amount of respect for what his parents are doing, especially his mom, about how much time she's pouring into this. But he misses her. You see that because he loves her and because he thoroughly just enjoys her as a person. And you see him, and you see him trying to deal with that. And I never saw him get difficult about that or like hard on her about that. But I sense it. That, of course, he'd love to spend more time with her. But, you know, to Leslie's credit, you know, she's sitting there like flipping cookies on the phone while she's talking about the new drug, or she's at the marching band practice. One of my favorite shots in the film is that, you know, Sam's at marching band practice, and I'll describe for the audience, it's like, you know, it's a summer practice session, so they're all in the parking lot going through the formation, and the kids are in the foreground kind of crossing in front of the camera, and then all of a sudden you see Leslie sitting on the ground, Indian style, with a cell phone, talking about the drug and the drug trial, and it's just this perfect example. It just visually just came together, all the things that were going on.
But I also have to say, like, when Leslie is with Sam, like, not at practice or talking to him or, you know, with him, she puts the phone, I mean, that phone is away. Mm-hmm. And that's the other part. It's like when she's there, she is there 100%. There's no, I'll be here 50% or 60%. You know, she's there. And I think that's probably why he wants her there more, because she's amazing at it. I don't see parents do that around me and my kids' class. You know, they everyone's always on their phones or emails and looking at that stuff. But Leslie is with him when he's there, when she's there.
There's a scene in the film where Sam is talking about there's this section of this, you know, this trial. He goes through this extraordinary process of some 100 tests and this kind of this final phase of this trial. And he's the last part, or one of the parts anyways, getting these medical photographs. And Sam talks about how he just kind of hates that part because he says it makes him feel like just a specimen. He says it makes him so he doesn't really feel like himself, that this is all he's good for. And you really get a sense that how self-aware he is of himself in this process. Here's another moment from the film Life According to Sam.
When I'm in the hospital, I'm isolated from my friends. I'm isolated from television. I'm isolated from my home. I'm isolated from my cats. It's like I lose all of the things that make me me, except for Progeria.
It's kind of a remarkable bit of wisdom, really, that you get from him from all the time, and which makes you realize that he's not just an ordinary kid. And beyond the Progeria, he's got an extraordinary mind. His sort of the way he is working through this and processing it makes you realize he is, beyond anything else, a very extraordinary kid.
No, I mean, Sam is remarkable in the way he sees things. And it's something we really tried hard to capture with him, too, because I don't think you'd realize it in the film. But it's interesting. After we had a screening and Sam was there, one of my friends asked me, you know, if Sam was worried about taking hospital pictures, why did he let you guys film him? You know, and my friend knows how close I film. I get very close to people when I'm shooting, and I asked Sam that, and Sam was like, well, you know, first off, I realized that when you're shooting film, it's not like taking pictures. You get to understand my personality, and when I realized that you're behind the camera and that's what you're trying to capture, it kind of started to go away. But you know, that said, he's remarkably smart, and the way that's what we kept trying to go for, the way he sees the world, the way he sees his disease, the bigger picture from him was very important to us, because I could sit in a room and talk to him for a very long time, and that to us makes a great character in a film, somebody that you want to have a conversation with. And we hope when you leave our film that you feel like, I just got to meet this kid for an hour and a half. I got to meet his mom and dad. These are people I normally would never meet, but I get to have a conversation with them. I get to figure out what makes them tick. This is amazing. And that to us is why kind of we do what we do. And
I think it was also interesting that when we were talking earlier about the film taking 3 years instead of one, and the perspective that Sam has at the end, I think what was interesting is that, you know, he came into this process wanting to do this, but I think also not really sure how it was going to go, like anybody who sits down for, you know, when they're the subject of a documentary. And I think the difference we also saw is that our final interview with him, he sat down very clear. He, you know, we sat down with him and he said, you know, there's some things, we asked a few questions and then he said, you know, there's some things I want to talk about. And we're like, oh, great, let's do that. And he was reflecting on, you know, what had happened to one of the other kids in the study, and a child who had passed. And he had thoughts about that. And he really wanted just to share where he was and how he learned about it. And it was like he wanted to pass on that that he knew about this, and it made an impact on him. And he didn't spend a lot of time going into, you know, anything after that. It was like he just wanted to acknowledge it and have him say it. And I think that was really quite important. And I think, you know, anytime you're interviewing someone, especially a child, you have to be very cognizant about how far you're going. If this was my child, how would I feel if they were being asked these questions? I think that's how Sean and I guide ourselves as to what we think is okay and not okay to ask subjects. And I think that where we went in terms of what we asked him and where he wanted to go was very different at the end of the film, I think, than it was at the beginning. But to Leslie and, you know, Scott's credit, the parents, they had, that's a huge decision to allow your child to sit down in a seat. And we were always very aware of what that meant for Sam and for them.
Yeah. Here's another moment with Sam from the film Life According to Sam.
I kind of deal with death a lot different than like other people might. Kids with progeria, sometimes they can't fight it out, and you know, they pass away, and it's just it's hard to think about it. Well, there's this time period when I asked my mom about one of my friends, Ori, and my mom said, "Oh, he passed away." I'm like, "Oh, well, what about Stuart?" She's like, "Well, she passed away. What about, you know, Ronnie? He died, and Mirko died. My friend Andrew, that was hard. You know, we were good friends, and he could have been, you know, such a great part of my life, and, you know, it's just too bad that I didn't get to know him for longer." And so I feel like I deal with death in a different, in a lot more constructed way, or, you know, structured way than other people would.
Sam Burns from the film Life According to Sam. We have with us Andrea Nix Fine and Sean Fine, the co-directors of the documentary. Dr. Leslie Gordon has also been with us. She's Sam's mother, co-founder of the Progeria Research Foundation. Next Wednesday, November 6th, we're partnering with the Utah Film Center to present a free screening of the film. It's part of our Through the Lens documentary series. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. We're going to take a brief break. We'll be back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we are continuing our series on documentary film. We're talking about the film Life According to Sam. We have Sean Fine and Andrea Nix Fine. They co-directed the film. It premiered at this year's Sundance Film Festival. It's airing on HBO this month. We're screening it next week as part of our film series, and we'll give you the details about that as we go along. We also have Dr. Leslie Gordon with us, Sam's mom, co-founder of the Progeria Research Foundation and co-chair of the Progeria Clinical Trials. And by the way, there's a link to the Progeria Research Foundation on our website. So, Dr. Gordon, I wanted to ask you, what did you learn? A big part of the film is this kind of Byzantine journey of getting a drug really into the system, or trying to get these clinical trials going. Mm-hmm. What did you learn about the way the system works?
Well, it's a great question. I learned a lot about the way the system can work, and I learned a lot. We learned a mountain of information about progeria. I think the bottom line for how the system works is it can work for you if you work really hard and have great partners. Everybody wants to save children with progeria. And everybody wants to be safe and make sure things are as safe as they can be during a clinical trial. So you just dive in. We created essentially the world's experts, which in progeria, now they are, and nobody had pretty much seen a child with progeria at the beginning. We started from scratch, and we built something sustainable. It was always meant to be a home for children with progeria. This was never meant to be a short-term event, because we knew that we would be conducting multiple clinical trials. What we learned from this trial was invaluable because, number one, we redefined the natural history of progeria so that we could look incredibly carefully in a scientific way at progeria and the different systems affected, and so that we could track those and ask questions about whether the drug was having an effect. But more importantly, what we learned is that although we have a tremendously long way to go, this is a treatment. We don't know how much it helps. It helps a little bit. It certainly is nowhere near a cure. We learned that we can get someplace. Even the cardiovascular system showed improvement. So if we can go partway, 10, 15% of the way, we can go all the way. And that is something we never knew before. So essentially, I learned that with a lot of hard work, a fabulous team, you can do anything. And I hope that in the future we're able to cure kids with progeria using novel treatments on top of the treatment that we already have.
Yeah. You know, one of the questions that comes up and the themes in the film is, as you're going through this process of these clinical trials, you make this concerted decision not to use a placebo in the trials. And it has an effect later on in trying to get your paper published. And so I'm wondering, I know on one hand you want there to be the rigor in the scientific process, but this also comes out in the film, but you also want there to be some kind of humane approach as well, because there is this urgency going on and the frustration with parents who weren't part of the trial, who couldn't be involved. I mean, this all comes up in the film, mm-hmm. but that balance was an interesting part. And I wanted you to, Dr. Gordon, talk about that.
Yeah, it is a balance, but it's actually a balance that's very calculated. I tell parents that, you know, these are clinical trials. It's a risk. We don't know whether the drug is going to help. We don't actually know whether the drug is going to hurt. But we will do everything we can for safety, and we'll measure what's going on. The worst thing, you know, the best thing that could happen in a trial is we find, yes, there's improvement. The second best thing is we find, no, there's no improvement. But actually the worst thing is we really can't tell after 3, 4, 5 years of work. We didn't design this properly. So the key here was to design it properly with the proper statistics to be able to answer the question. And we could do that with our statistical design without having a placebo control. This is not completely uncommon. It happens in pediatric fatal diseases, cancers, brain cancers in children, pretty commonly. So we certainly weren't creating a roadmap for how to conduct a trial without a placebo control. We just had to make sure that our statistics could withstand that design. Mm.
Sean Fine and Andrea Nix Fine, I wanted to ask, the film, toward the end, what's interesting is you say, you start when he's, you know, younger, and then you go through this process and you see a kind of an older, in some ways more kind of wizened Sam talking about, reflecting on all of this. And toward the end, he talks about what he's learning about progeria. And he says that he knows more about it now. And he says this, it seems less an embodiment to him. Sean and Andrea, what does he mean by that?
I think it's almost, you know, I can only guess because you'd really have to ask Sam. But if I had to guess the embodiment, it feels like the dark monster in the closet, the disease itself, that he's like an entity. He refers to it at that point in the same statement. It's something that is overwhelming, and it sounds like this dark mass that just is no way to tackle it. And I think what he's saying is that, no, we looked you in the eye and we figured you out, and we're coming at you piece by piece. And you know what it is? It's not this thing that defines me. It's not the boogeyman. It's not this. It's this thing in my body, and we understand it, and we're going to get it. And that's kind of what I got from him, is that it's a much more control. If you can think about the mechanics of it, it's the first step to figuring out what you can do about it. And I think he sort of didn't see it, you know, as this dark force anymore. I don't know. Leslie, is that what you think he meant? I'd have no idea. But that's what my guess would be.
That's exactly what I would have thought. You said it better than I could have. You're absolutely right. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
So, Leslie,
understand your enemy and you can attack.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dr. Gordon, Leslie, what's Sam up to?
Well, right now he's getting ready to come home on the bus.
Yeah.
He's in, he's a junior, and he's, you know, he's getting ready to apply to colleges. He's doing the band thing. He's doing really well. He did a talk at TEDx Mid-Atlantic last week.
Wow.
Which I, as a mom, I couldn't have been prouder. He was really something. And so that's what he's up to. Well, you know, when he can, hanging out with his friends, and I'm sure there'll be a big discussion about staying up late tonight to watch the,
the game.
Baseball game, the World Series.
Yeah. Just barely turned 17. Does he still want to be a geneticist? I think when you're that age, you keep moving stuff around. Is he still thinking that way?
Yeah, he loves the sciences. And he's thinking within the realm biochemistry, genetics, you know, other sort of science-based things. And I think he'll get to college and explore as many as he can before just settling on one. But I love the fact that he's able to think fluidly within the sciences, that they're not really all that separate from one another. So maybe he can do lots of neat things. And as he says, he needs to change the world in his own little way.
Yeah. That's Dr. Leslie Gordon, Sam's mom, co-founder of the Progeria Research Foundation, co-chair of the Progeria Clinical Trials. For a link to the Research Foundation, go to our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Dr. Gordon, thank you very much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
And Andrea Nix-Fine, Sean Fine, co-directors of the documentary, joined us today. And thank you very much to you for being with us.
It was our pleasure.
Thank you.
Next Wednesday, we're partnering with Utah Film Center to present a free screening of Life According to Sam, part of our Through the Lens documentary series. Sam's dad, Dr. Scott Burns, will be with us for a Q&A following the film, and you can get the details about that on our website. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.